go. Little miniature one.
Yeah. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Film Fund Podcast. I'm your host, founder, and executive producer at the Film Fund, Thomas Verity. I'm also an award-winning filmmaker, producer, and film festival judge. I started the Film Fund to give filmmakers an easier, alternative way to get their films funded. Instead of working on a screenplay, crowdfunding campaign, or grant application, you write one sentence pitching your film for a chance to receive up to $10,000 and other prizes to make it. Our summer 2022 narrative and documentary funding contests are open, so check us out at thefilmfund.co to enter your one-sentence pitch for a chance to receive up to $10,000 for your short film. I want to remind listeners that contests do happen regularly, so if you are listening at a later date, check out the website at thefilmfund.co for the most up-to-date information. Today, we have Nick Justice on the show again because we didn't air the first one because I had some technical difficulties. I'm not even going to say what it was because it's so stupid, but I selected the wrong mic input. I'll just say it. So we didn't have any audio coming from me. So Nick, thank you again for doing this again. And yeah, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hey man, thanks for having me back and second effort. So that way, you know, I probably sound better the second time, I guess. You definitely will sound better. I might just sound smarter.
Yeah, there you go.
So a little bit about me. I'm in Philadelphia. I run a production company called Watch Me Rise Films. That's mostly like documentary commercial type of stuff. But before that, kind of have like a background in like the entertainment narrative type stuff. And I kind of chose to jump out of that and do this more documentary stuff and a little more control, smaller crews and stuff. But probably the main reason we're going to talk about is I also host and manage Rough Cuts along with my partner, Ryan Scott. Rough Cuts is filmmaking community here in Philadelphia where we kind of get together. And I say it's kind of like an open mic for filmmakers where we will, you know, you show up and you sign up and we'll play a movie and offer some critique or questions or comments about it, and just a chance to get people together, workshop things that are finished or rough. But really just hopefully my biggest hope for it is a chance for filmmakers to get to know each other and trust each other and start building relationships. And then hopefully that leads to better collaboration.
Yeah, it is a really cool environment. I've been fortunate enough to attend a few Rough Cut events prior to the pandemic and over the pandemic for, I guess, about 2 years. They were fully remote on Zoom. I went to a few of them, but now they're back in person, which is awesome. And I have not been back yet because I was just telling Nick I'm taking piano lessons. If you want a glimpse into my personal life that is full of many hobbies, I'm also in a bowling league. But that is Wednesdays, but I'm hoping to get there soon because it is just an awesome community. You know, you watch people they'll play commercials or screen is the word I'm looking for. Commercials they worked on, short films, you know, experimental stuff, music videos, just really whatever they're working on. And it's super cool. You can get, you know, feedback from real filmmakers, which is pretty invaluable. You know, if you're not outside of like a film school environment, getting feedback on, you know, a rough cut of something is really, especially from people who are in the industry and professionals in the industry, it's just like, it's so valuable to me. So it's definitely an awesome concept and an awesome organization. I found it through Will DeJessa, who's been on the show before. He's also in our filmmaking community. So yeah, that's awesome. And now, Nick, did you go to film school?
I have sort of a balance of that. So I went to journalism school at a university, so like broadcast journalism, that I dropped out of because I was like, this isn't quite it. And then I worked at a TV station for a little while and then went to New York Film Academy for one of their like short programs. So that kind of serves as film school, but it really doesn't quite qualify to most people's film school. Because it was, you know, like 9 or 18 weeks or something. Mostly it was my excuse to move to New York City. And we did some film training there. And I learned a bunch there, learned sort of that process of things. But you know, some people might see that as like a, you know, it was like also a vacation. Some people treated it in the class were like, you know, European kids there for like the gap year kind of thing. So it kind of varies. But I quickly, when I was there, I was like, quickly, like, the fellow students aren't exactly the peers I'm looking for. It was the teachers. So I ended up teaching there pretty quickly. Engaged? What's that?
They just weren't engaged, the other students?
I was just ahead of them, I guess.
Okay.
Or more ambitious or something. Not that they weren't engaged. We all, like, worked together, but I was, like, there to, like, really make a career out of it with real stakes. Which wasn't everybody's story. Other people had that same story, of course. But, you know, out of the 30, I think there was probably just two or three of us that were like, nope, this is really it. We're here to really do the thing.
I gotcha. Yeah. So you felt more connected to the professors or the instructors.
Yeah. Because you know, they were working people, and this was their, like, I didn't go there in the summer. I went there in, like, the winter, but, you know, it's like, this was like in the summer, they'll make movies and they might, you know, teach part-time in the year or whatever. So it's kind of in their thing. I was like, oh, okay, this guy and that guy, those people are working. And I was like, and I want to work with them on the next thing, you know? So,
right. And you said you ended up teaching there as well?
Yeah. So I was there and taught one or two of the sessions. Well, it was like their high school sessions. So they're a little bit lighter, but, like, kind of the same curriculum, just like younger kids. Okay. And they just couldn't check out the equipment by themselves. So I guess I was more like a teaching assistant. Okay. That was, it was fun because, you know, I was however many years older than the high school kids, but really they, like, couldn't, for insurance reasons, just give these kids all this gear.
Right,
and then I just got to be there and workshop all their films with them, like, constantly. So the teachers might teach, like, a classroom thing, but I think New York Film Academy was really, like, at that time, and probably still is, their method is just, like, hands-on as much as possible. Like, day one, here's the cameras. And then day two is like, look, you didn't know how to expose them. Let's show you how to do that. So there's a lot of hands-on stuff. And it was actually exactly what I was looking for at the time. So
is that a program you would recommend?
I had a great time there. Yeah. I think mileage may vary, but I had a good time there. And especially if, like, I think it's not quite that huge, like, USC film school experience, which is also a huge price ticket. So this one is kind of lighter on a little bit of both of those, but I think you can definitely learn a lot and gain experience and definitely access to equipment, which is sometimes half of the reason people go to film school.
So have you always done filmmaking or video production full time then?
Pretty much, like, right out of high school. So I took, like, introduction and was in a high school class where we did, like, you know, the school news kind of thing. And I guess it was, like, my sophomore year. And I remember, like, we were editing something and I was like, this is what I want to do forever. So I definitely remember the epiphany.
Oh, that's awesome.
Of that happening. And, you know, definitely had some random jobs through high school years and a little bit afterwards. But definitely always was the goal and the passion, and figuring out how to turn into a career was, you know, a bit of a winding road, I think. Like, right, of course, this is, you know, near 20 years ago. So it's a different industry now, you know, where you see a lot more video. Like, I remember, like, you know, I was working on a TV station at the time, and they're like, what's YouTube? Like, let's figure out how that is. You know, so now there's a lot more places to watch video, which means there's a lot more places to make video. So there's a little winding path to get there than there are currently. There's more options, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's definitely more accessible, especially in terms of equipment. I mean, you can buy, you know, like a Blackmagic Pocket cinema camera for, I don't know, what are they, like $1,000 or so?
You could probably pick up a used one there. I mean, I think the high end of the Blackmagic is like 2,500 or something. I think that's the 6K. But yeah, there's lots of awesome entry stuff. You know, I was using like a little handy cam. And then at that point, you had to like try and figure out a way to get like cool still lenses on there. And you just like needed an insane amount of light because it cut light. Gotcha. And then you added more and it cut light. And it was already not sensitive. Now you can almost film in like moonlight with like incredible cameras. So there's a lot more fun toys for sure.
And very expensive toys as well, but they're also budget toys. We have a page on our website. It might be a little, we haven't updated it in a while, TBH. You know, we did this over the pandemic, but it's a resources page. So if you want, like, you know, basic camera kits and things like that, you know, what kind of camera, what kind of lighting, you know, what kind of flags or, you know, other film equipment, accoutrement, go on there and you can click right through. And it, we actually segmented it for like budget level, maybe experience as well. So check that out.
Oh, that's cool.
So something we don't promote as much as we should. But I just find that super helpful because, like, one of the first things, because that could be, that's something you need to learn in itself too. Like, what do I even start with? There's so much. Totally. Do I start just shooting my iPhone? Like, there are apps you can download, like Filmic Pro, where you change the settings. Do I go out and buy a camera? Do I rent a camera? So yeah, just there's, with access to equipment comes also like an overwhelming amount of options, I think, too. And like a lot of, like, I didn't know where to start it.
Oh yeah, there's a ton of information. And then it gets mixed up, you know, information gets mixed up with advertising too, or it gets messy, right? You know, somebody wants to sell you the new one and you kind of want the new one anyway, but you know, it's like, do you need it or do you require it? Yeah, I'm always a little slow on the upgrade path because, like, this works. It's still working. I've mastered it.
We had a show on YouTube. We don't put episodes out anymore, but over the pandemic, we were doing a YouTube series called High Concept, and we were posting them to YouTube. I was literally filming in my parents' basement. I made a little studio down there with a Blackmagic Pocket, the 1080p version, a couple of lights, and like a backdrop. And some of those videos have like a few thousand views on YouTube, which is awesome. They're not like, you know, a million or anything like that, but it's still, you know, you're a lot, at the end of the day, a lot of these videos are, or a lot of these films and videos are going on online. You don't need to necessarily shoot in 8K, you know, unless you want to do some like crazy cropping or something like that. So it really, you know, there are a lot of options out there, and like, you don't need to go buy a Red or something, you know, like that. A lot of people think that's kind of what you need. There are so many options out there to start with, and equipment's so important. Check out KitSplit as well. We always give away KitSplit gift cards. It's kind of like if you own a camera, you can rent it out when you're not using it, so you can get really affordable prices on equipment too if you just have like a weekend shoot or something coming up.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, this is going to bleed over to my Rough Cuts ethos, but just like, also if you're just starting out or want to, like, find someone else who's doing it. And just like a phone call with them or an email to them is like, hey, I'm trying to come up with something. Because it's just such a shortcut to knowledge, you know. All the YouTube videos are great, all the blogs, all that stuff, podcasts is really cool, but that quick, like, somebody directly answering your question could honestly just save you.
That's really true. like I research, used to be on, you know? I don't even remember the name of it, but I was on this forum like toward the end of high school. It was like this filmmaking forum, and I was asking all these questions. I don't even know if people go on forums anymore, but
thread after thread.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, you're right. Like, if I were in person and I could just like have picked someone's brain, be like, oh, like, what do you shoot on? Like, what should I start with? It would have been so much more direct than just like fumbling my way through. But sometimes you have to learn that way too, you know, just pick up a camera and go outside.
Totally. I remember one resource that was over my head, but was like really valuable, or eventually became valuable, is ASC magazine. So the American Cinematographer.
Cinematographer. Yeah.
And you know, I remember getting the first couple episodes. I like won it in like a Twitter raffle or something at some point, subscription. Oh, nice. And I was like, oh man, I really don't understand what these articles are saying at all. But kind of got familiar with it and eventually started decoding some of it. And you're like, oh, okay. That's cool. That's how they made that. That's what they're talking about. And that's like at a level that is still way out of my comfort range or over my head or whatever, you know, talking to people that are shooting, I don't know, Dune or something. You're like, yeah, I'm not going to be doing that. But the truth is in 10 years, that stuff that they're doing, the technology is like, it trickles down. Like the good example right now is like The Mandalorian, right? This is like 5 years old almost. And they shot it like with the like LED screens in the background using the video game engines and stuff. Still over my head, but it is like understanding the concept of it, and it starts coming down, you know, and to the point where there's people just like filming especially in a pandemic, like upscale, like Zoom streaming things on there. So it's not, everything is not like about a Star Wars movie. Like it gets toned down to like a corporate event eventually. And just having that knowledge that it exists is valuable.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like definitely being aware of what the tech is, even if you don't fully understand it, I find like even just seeing like the headlines of some stuff, like sometimes I'll check out Deadline or some of the other industry mags just to see what's going on. Or, you know, we have the sister company FF Branded. So I'll get Ad Age emails and like, I don't subscribe to Ad Age, so I can't read the articles, but just seeing like, oh, like this is the new CMO of that company, or they did this ad and they got a really bad response from their audience and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Just being like attuned to the technology and what's happening in the industry is a helpful thing. As well. When you were talking about American Cinematographer, it made me think of a question I wanted to ask you. When you do these like documentary style shoots, what's your crew look like? Do you bring a DP on set or camera operators, or is it more lean than that?
It kind of varies, right? Budget level, scales. Mm-hmm. But typically 3 to 5 people.
Okay.
And sometimes I might bring in a DP that's better than me, which is not hard to achieve, but sometimes you're like, oh, I want to shoot it. And documentary is a bit different. And I sort of approach it maybe different than some people do, where I think it's really important to preserve the subjects, which we're dealing with real people, their experience, right? So it's like, rather than like making sure the shot is perfect for me, I want to make sure that person is perfectly comfortable, because their thing will be, yeah, their honest reaction will be better, even if it's out of focus or it's too dark or it's too bright or the window is blown out. So I tend to protect and preserve that. Especially in documentary sense, which, you know, I'm not that unique or innovative in that. That's just like, not everybody has a sensibility. And when you're working with real subjects, like I work with a decent amount of schools. So you're like in classrooms and kids, and not everybody likes being around kids, and not everybody understands how to, you know, kind of become filmmaking furniture instead of like big disruptive things, you know. We're like, okay, action, do that, you know, hold for sound, all that kind of stuff. I'm like, hold on, just, you know, if the sound sounds bad, let's just keep the interview going, let me know as the director, but like keep it going. And then if we need to repeat that, well, great, but if it's not necessarily an important story, I don't need to hear it again. So that's every project is a little bit different in that sense. But if we're like, more controlled environment, like I do some stuff with museums where we can kind of bring in some kind of cool fancy toys and, you know, capture the sculptures or stuff on the wall, then somebody else is usually better at that than me.
For sure. Not for sure. Like, yeah, you suck. Just, I understand.
Well, I mean, I kind of do. I try and convince most people that I'm just a hack, you know, but a few people have been tricked. That's funny. So,
That's awesome, though. I love that term you used, filmmaking furniture. I don't know if you came up with that or not, but it's very cool.
I'm sure I read that somewhere. It's but, great. You know, just like where you're not disturbing things, people there. Eventually get comfortable.
Yeah. And now in terms of, so I did a series of documentary interviews earlier this year, and I wasn't actually the one conducting the interviews. We were partnering with a high school, and the high school kids were interviewing these military veterans. Now I worked with the kids and like prepped them a little bit, taught them, you know, kind of how to interview, you know, what to ask. I kind of wrote the questions for them as well a little bit, you know, tweaked their what they wrote. But some of the interviewees came in and like had done a million interviews before, and they wanted to talk with the person interviewing them, you know, to get comfortable. So I was just wondering what your style was. Do you generally like to kind of warm up the subject and talk to them before, or do you like to just go in cold and start asking away?
I'm definitely in the camp that would rather have a pre-interview. You know, whether that's the day before, the week before, the morning of. Because I think even in documentary, especially when you're dealing with client stuff, you should know what they're probably going to say. Hopefully you can get some variation on the response. But the question to like, so what was it like when you came home from the war? You should probably know that if you, you said they were veterans, right? That they're dealing with. So it's like, you should probably have some of that idea. And you know, that's somewhat of a luxury, but I think it's definitely a luxury worth fighting for if you're like, hold on, can I get the numbers to the people, the contact information? And that just changes it from, you know, your first a fact-finding mission to a storytelling mission. So, yeah, it's not always possible, and it's not always required, of course. But if you don't do that, it kind of leans more into like news gathering, which I also have a background in, but like that's cool and that's has a point, you know, but like I think I think the difference, like I have a pretty broad definition of filmmaking. Some people don't think everything is. I'm like everything's filmmaking with a camera if you have intention. So if you're just reacting, you're a videographer, you know, but if you like have a plan, a goal, then you're a filmmaker. For me, that's, that's my working definition. So I'm trying to make everything more filmmaking than videography, where you're just like chasing people around with a camera. But if you know that they're going to serve a dinner and then you know that you should get them starting to cook that dinner. And where they're going to start that is in the kitchen, and you need the pots and the pans, you know. But if you're just a videographer, you're just chasing people around all day.
I like that distinction because
someone,
I cringed a little, but someone who didn't know me that well was introducing me, and they introduced me as a videographer, and I'm not even a cinematographer, so it was totally, you know, not even accurate. But I just like I was like, ooh, like no, I'm not a cinematographer, I'm not a videographer. Like what we do is a little bit more elevated than that. But I think, and I was kind of not struggling to explain the difference to someone who's not in the industry, but I had to think about like, okay, well, what is the difference between videography and filmmaking or cinematography? And you're right. I think it is intention. You know, you're going in with kind of that framework for the story you're going to tell. What angles am I going to get? What am I really trying to say here with this shot? So I think that's great. I think intention is a great definition for, you know,
yeah, that works for me. And I mean, I'm with you on the little cringe videographer. I don't really use it as a dirty word. Like if somebody calls me a videographer, that's fine.
Right.
I'm not really offended by it. But yeah, it's like, I hope I get to be a filmmaker, you know? And I will submit that I'm probably making more videos than I'm making films, but you know, that's fine. If anybody can make any living with a camera, I think that's badass. So if you're not a video, if you're a videographer, you can still be elevated, you know, so there's room. That's fine. Yes. So I still think you're cool if you're doing that.
Cool. So what are some of the major challenges you encounter in the filmmaking process?
The challenges in filmmaking, I think there's a lot, right? I think the, you know, follow through is hard. Finding stories is hard. And again, a lot of my work is sort of with working with clients. So sort of the beginning is, you know, client management and all that stuff. We'll leave the business side a little out of it. We can, unless you want to dig into it. But I think the creative elements there is getting people on board with the concept of a story instead of just like a brochure. And so I think a difference there, I think, is conflict. What is hard? What is happening if we don't do this? Like what are the stakes of this film that we're making? You know? So without that conflict, I think it just kind of become like a trifold brochure. Like for your information, here's a video. Which is sometimes what's required. I get it. Like, especially in like working with some museums and stuff. And they're just like, no, we just want like facts. And I'm like, yeah, that we could do that. But what if we also did this? You know? So some of that navigating, and sometimes it's easy to forget, like you know, your story needs conflict and characters and stakes. Otherwise, it's boring. So I think that's like, it's like an easy thing to say right now. And it's easy. Everybody listening is probably like, yeah, I've heard about that. That's fine. But like, it's the craft. It's hard, you know, like getting a shot in focus and exposed is like pretty fun and exciting. But like, it's so simple to learn and master before like the storytelling craft, you know, like that's what I think director really does.
Yeah, I 100% agree. You can, this is making me think of photography too. Like I picked up film photography as a hobby, I guess last summer, and pretty, you know, I'm an amateur for sure, but pretty quickly figured out like how to expose the image, how to get it in focus. Like, oh, this is a pretty shot. But the next level is like, okay, well, what's the depth here? Like, what is this about? Like, why am I capturing this particular action in this moment in time? And I think you're right. I think that's the job of a director to really craft the story. Even, you know, in the edit, you know, how are we editing this together? Are we, you know, reaching that vision that the director had for telling that story? And I think that's why editing is so important too for filmmaking. But you brought up a really, really awesome set of words. You said conflict and stakes, and that's something I just love. I mean, they taught me that I did a creative writing concentration as part of my English major, and they just, you know, hit that home every single class. Like, your story has to have conflicts, part of the stakes. And so I drive that home whenever someone asks me what we look for in film fund pitches: conflict and stakes. Like, you know, that's what our judges are trained on evaluating. What's the conflict in this one sentence pitch, and what are the stakes of that conflict? Like, what's going to happen if they make one decision versus the other, or one outcome versus the other? Are they going to die? Are they going to live? Are they going to succeed? Are they going to fail? And that's what's interesting. And I think that's super interesting too, like navigating that in the doc world or the corporate world. Like, people might be listening to this, like, what are the stakes of like a documentary? What does that mean? Do you have any interesting examples of like conflict in the videos, the types of videos you make?
Sure. Yeah. I think one. Yeah, I mean, so sometimes, right, sometimes there's like some vagueness around it, but like, right, and like a shoe commercial, like, what are the stakes? You're like, you just buy shoes, we're selling shoes or whatever. And I don't really make shoe commercials, but just like as an example. You know, it's like, well, your character, and sometimes the commercials, they don't even fully flesh out a character, but like the director has done it, right? She's watching that Nike commercial. The director has a backstory to that character. It's not just some lady running down the street. It's like, she's a lady who has a backstory, and that backstory is she's a mom that's trying to get back to her old like track glory days. So, you know, she's whatever, her body's different, things are changed, but she remembers when she had this great time running, and so she wants to get back to that. So it's like the journey of getting back to that is hard. That's hard, right? So like, that's the conflict. So I think just knowing that, is definitely there. And then sometimes I'm like, you know, like I have, some like museum clients that like, you know, like, well, what's the conflict of this? You're like, well, right, like getting this collection of Picassos together is hard because why? Right? Like, Picasso made a lot of work. He made so much work and he's so famous. What's the big deal with this collection? And they're like, oh, well, this is like, that's just like, instead of making that the thing we brag about, like, talk about why that was hard to pull that together for this exhibit. Or it could be as simple as like, this exhibit only runs for like 6 months and it's gone. You'll never see it again. It goes back in the vault.
Yeah. And the stakes of that you may not get to see it if you don't come.
Right.
Your life would be forever changed not having witnessed the beauty of seeing these Picasso paintings.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, so those like aren't necessarily like, you know, like the hero's journey type stakes we might be used to in like screenwriting or something, where they're saving the world or getting the girl or whatever.
But there's still stakes, and they're still valid, and it's still what people still are stakes. Interested in seeing. Definitely. They're still compelling.
Yeah.
You know, it's not life or death, but I was thinking about something. I was listening to you, but I was also thinking about something right before you were talking about the shoe commercial.
That's fine. Interviews. Interviews.
It was something about the stakes of something. Anyway, Yeah, stakes are important.
Well, I started teaching high school this past okay. year. I teach film and video.
I saw your like Hot Ones video.
Yeah. We'll talk about that too. But I wanted to say I start with like each class with, right? So hopefully in high school film class, we get to make short films eventually. But most people don't want short films. Mm-hmm. Like they're hard to find, you know? So we start each one with watching a short film or animation or whatever. And like a quick worksheet that I like sort of stole from Pixar is something called a story spine. Okay. And so it's like pretty much every story like fits mm-hmm. through this. It's like, there's like different steps. So, let's see if I can get them off the top of my head. But, right. So it's like the beginning of the story is like, every day. So it's like normal every day, right? This person is whatever. Woody is, you know, the king of the toys until one day. It's like the second step until one day, and then Buzz Lightyear shows up. And because of that, because Buzz Lightyear shows up, Woody feels jealous. And then because of that, three times. So because of that, because of that, right? So the stakes keep getting higher until finally Buzz and Woody become friends. And now, ever since then, right, they kind of have adventures with the toys together. So the steps are one, every day, then two is until one day, the conflict. And then because of that conflict, and because of that second conflict, and because of that second, third conflict, until finally, and now ever since then. So we kind of get the kids to watch a short film that I'll find, and then we'll like run through that worksheet. And just like that understanding of storytelling, it's like it is everywhere. You know, so I'm like hopefully teaching them the craft of exposing things and all that. But if they actually just like get out of my class and like learn that story structure, I'm like, great success in whatever they do with the rest of their lives. Like, not everybody gets to be a filmmaker. Not everybody wants to be a filmmaker. Some of you just want to take the class. But if you think of a photograph or a news article or whatever, you'll see that story.
I really like that framework. And I like how you reverse engineered it, too. Yeah. It's like, okay, let's watch this film and now let's see how it fits into the story spine. I think you could do it both ways, too. You could start out, you know, try to – it's almost like making an outline for your story. And I think that's definitely a good tool. Maybe we'll do a blog post on that. Shout out, Pixar, and then Nick as well.
yeah, it's Pixar. I didn't invent that. That's Pixar. So I was just, like, trying to find – right, because I kind of consume a lot of storytelling books and stuff. And then it's like trying to find something that was like relatable at the high school level for the kids. And the hero journey, all great. It's kind of a lot. A lot of steps, kind of repeats, and you're like, how is this different? But the story spine I thought was very simple. And you know, Pixar, you can't lie and say that you don't love those characters every time.
We did in my grad program, I did a Master of Engineering and Technical Entrepreneurship, which is a bunch of words just to say it was product development and entrepreneurship and marketing, basically, with a little bit of finance thrown in. But one thing we learned in one of the marketing classes was something from Pixar. I forget what they called it, but it was something similar to the story spine. It was like I think the class was called like creativity techniques or something like that. I'm saying all this to say that Pixar is an awesome resource. Like if you just Google like Pixar storytelling tips, like all this stuff will come up and it's all gold. They know what they're doing there. In terms of spinning a yarn.
Yeah. They have a book. I don't think the story sign was in the book, but called Creativity Inc., which is kind of their chronicle, their rise that I think one of their CEOs put together. Book recommendation.
Right now it's gonna be a while until I read my next book because I'm currently reading It by Stephen King and it's like 1600 pages. I think maybe it's not 1100 pages. And it's like so long.
I recently watched
Don't tell me anything. I haven't finished the book and I haven't like watched either movie or series. Yeah.
I found it very bizarre.
In what way?
Very bizarre. Yeah. Cause I'm kind of late to horror movies. I didn't really watch them growing up or anything. So I was like, oh, there's a big craze, the It movie and part two, you know. So I was like, oh, let's watch the original one. And I was like, how did this become a thing? It is, it's weird. I mean, it is like a early TV movie, like, or three parts or something. So, I mean, it's not technically beautiful or anything, but it's just also odd.
The book is really odd.
It's an odd story.
Like, I'm about halfway through, and it's just like, it's part supernatural.
Yeah.
It's very like psychological in terms of like understanding the characters and their motives and their desires and everything. It's just like things morph into other things. And,
right.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's a good story so far.
Yeah. I mean, I think the only thing that it became was because of the performance from Tim Curry was so good.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out.
Such a good clown. And you certainly like clown with makeup, but like the craft of clowning is like all over it. It's cool. But yeah, that was a weird movie. I was expecting it to be like a horror movie, and I'm like, kind of isn't. Like the new one, the new ones are much more, you know, kind of horrifying. But the other one was like, this is sort of trippy.
Yeah, let's check that out. The book is definitely
horror.
Like, they're
so anyway,
transgression of boundaries. And I took a lot of horror classes in college as part of my film minor. And we had this whole list of, like, what makes the horror genre, and different subgenres. And this book's hitting, like, all of them. You know, the abject, you know, like, the gross things that we don't want in our everyday lives. Like, you know, mucus and vomit and blood and all that kind of stuff. It's all in there. And it's gross. But yeah, it's definitely interesting. But the book's pretty trippy too, because you have things like, it's not just a killer clown, not to spoil anything, but you're getting into like the clown thing. It like morphs into different things depending on who it's like trying to kill or like attack. Yeah, it's like it's a giant killer bird.
It's psychological. Or, yeah, it's other, different.
It's like a werewolf. Yeah. So like we just got into that. But yeah, it's interesting. We're getting a little off topic here, but I love the books so far. So if you like horror, I would definitely recommend that. I mean, Stephen King is just a genius when it comes to writing horror. Yes.
Yeah, a bit of a famous name there.
So... Yeah. Let's see. What else can we talk about? I have. Do you have any film festival experience?
Basically, no, not much. I don't. I haven't really made very many things with ever the goal of like, oh, film festival. I've been to some, and I've worked on things that ended up going to film festivals, but was never quite my goal on most things. But you know, it's always, it's, I'm a big fan of like watching movies, and sometimes the only place you can watch unique movies are film festivals. Just for the financial reasons of big movies gotta be kind of sure bets. So they get a little similar, but film festivals, you can watch really weird, cool stuff. And definitely it's kind of the only place to watch short films in a theater. So mostly just as
that's
a
awesome, though, because you know, then you get to submit or really experience, just, you know, if anyone out there has never been to a film festival, I would definitely recommend going, even if you just go as, you know, an attendee and sit in the audience. You, they have filmmaker Q&As, and you get to ask filmmakers questions after, depending on the festival. You can meet the filmmakers, talk to them. It's really cool if you're into film. You know, and if you have aspirations of, you know, screening at a film festival, they have panels and things like that you can learn a lot from as well. I would take the panels, you know, with a grain of salt sometimes. Like, I went out to the first film festival I went to was Holly Short's film festival. I had a screenplay in their screenplay competition, and there was this panel, and they were talking about, like, this was probably 2000. I don't know. I'm really bad with years and time. It was like, oh my God, I'm getting old. Like 10 years ago or something. I don't know. But they were talking about like 4K, and they were, one of the panelists was like, oh, you know, 4K is the next big thing. And, you know, it's, we're still on the cusp of, you know, not, there aren't being a lot of things that are, there aren't a lot of things that are being broadcast in 4K. So if you have 4K content, it's going to be higher in demand. And I was just listening to it. I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then I saw it play out, and I'm like, that's not really true like at all. I mean, maybe if you're talking about like getting distribution on Netflix and it has to be filmed at a certain resolution and things like that, but you know, panelists are people too. They're not always, they don't always have the crystal ball, but just go to film festivals. That's my advice, because you can always learn something and see some really cool cool art.
Yeah, and it's of course a place to meet a bunch of other filmmakers, whether they're the ones on the stage or the ones in the audience. Definitely that room is full of people that are kind of obsessed with the same stuff you might be, or interested if you're not obsessed. You know, whether that's, there's obviously those technical panels, which, you know, right, that guy wasn't wrong, 4K is everywhere, but it didn't necessarily make movies better, right? That's kind of the thing. So there's the like technical ones, and again, like I was kind of dragging on about storytelling. It's like that's like always gonna be the part, you know. And right, and you mentioned like 8K earlier, like there's so many things, but like, you know, Rocky is still just Rocky. It was way before 4K, way before digital, you know, shot on film. It's superior, but nobody shoots on film anymore. So how's it that superior? I don't know. It's just like technical stuff, you know. And once you kind of realize that everything all of us humans do are just hinged on that story spine, you know, like the way we live our lives, the way we make decisions, the way we remember our own stories, the way our families are put together, it's like kind of hinges on this like story. So, and it's pretty awesome, like, you know, like the filmmaking, I think, is like the highest evolution that we have right now of storytelling. So it's like sort of the place like we make myths, you know, like I mentioned Rocky, which, you know, I'm in Philadelphia, you're nearby. So it's like certainly like a Homer one, but I always like it because people always get like a little confused. Like Rocky is like based on a true story, but it's not at all.
Yeah.
And so people get mad that it's at the art museum. There's like the statue. And I'm like, it's not a sports guy.
It's amazing. It's like, yeah, I'm in Philly as well.
It's American Hercules. Just moved, it's like, you know, our myth.
My background is my bedroom right now, which is so unprofessional. Yeah. I'm mad at myself. I have a green screen coming. It's like a green screen that I think attaches to my chair. And then I'm going to like green, you know, comp in a or key in like a, one of those step and repeat things with all the logos for the next one. But yeah, no, I'm in Philly too. And yeah, exactly. They'll all think I'm at a panel.
You'll fool everybody.
We'll see. You'll
think we're actually there. Everyone's fooled.
Yes.
Yeah, they're like, oh yeah, I'm actually I'm reporting live. I downloaded from OBS, festival every
which
week.
Is really cool software if you're into like video stuff. I'm sure you're familiar with it, Nick. But it's called, it stands for Open Broadcasting Studio or Open Broadcaster Studio, and you can do like, I downloaded a plugin for it that was like a background removal, kind of like you do on Zoom, but it looked terrible, like it was just all blurry. So I'm getting a green screen. But yeah, Philly's awesome. Philly Hercules or American Hercules. That's so, you're just full of catchy little titles today. Filmmaking Furniture, American Hercules. I love that. That sounds like some kind of like movie name, like American Hercules or something. Like a documentary. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just our myth, right? Everybody knows that one. And we keep retelling the story, like actually, like in like the Creed franchise, it's like actually the retelling of the same story. But, you know, it's like every sports movie like follows that recipe or format, you know? So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, and it just follows, you know, the thing before it. So we're just kind of repeating these cycles with a few, you know, different skins or wallpapers or whatever.
And then, that's the most important part. Like you said, I mean, that's what our whole company at the Film Fund is based on. You know, we're not looking for, trailers, you know, it's not a trailer contest, it's not a film festival. It's what's your pitch, what's your story about? So it's super important to us, and because we believe that even like a simple one sentence pitch has the potential to be compelling enough to be turned into a short film, which I just think is awesome. It is tricky.
Well, that's tricky, right? That one sentence pitch.
It's
one sentence. Sounds easy.
But
no, it's deceptively.
We do have some blog posts on our website.
It's not hard, right?
I think. And analyze some of the winning sentences. Yeah. And I wrote one of them. I may have written all of them myself. I used to write blog content personally. Now we have a little bit of a team that does that. But there's this one article, Don Finelli's pitch, Sunday Dinner, I just thought was brilliant. And like I I'll link it here when we post the show notes maybe. And it's just like, you know, uses these words, like these powerful action words, and you can do so much in one sentence to create conflict and to create stakes. And you know, a lot, Nick isn't, sometimes we have previous winners of the contests on the show, and when we do that, we'll have like their winning sentences, and sometimes we read them and we go in and analyze like what made this so compelling. And it is really hard, right? Because you have to get the crux of the story across in just one sentence, but it's also a really good exercise, I think, for storytellers to try to distill you know, your story, your film concept really into one succinct pitch. And it's tough, but it's really a good exercise, I think, too. We've had a lot of feedback that filmmakers like that going through it.
Yeah. I mean, I think being able to talk about your story without like being a rant is so important, right? Whether that's dealing with a client or like grant applications and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, you just have to be able to do it. Like people talk about businesses and elevator pitches and all that kind of stuff. And it's really the same thing. If only there was like some story spine tool to help. No, but no, it is definitely a challenge.
Sponsored by the story spine.
Yeah. No. So yeah, it really just always ends up coming back in there. And I can nerd out on all kinds of camera specs too and stuff, but it's just like, well, at a certain point, what's the point of that beautiful visual if it's not advancing the story, and there's no reason I'm ever going to watch this movie again, you know, or share it or fund it in your case or whatever. You know, it's like, if that's not a character I care about that's trying to overcome a challenge that is important to them, right? It's like,
that's what it all comes
point,
back
you know?
To.
So,
to get a little academic on everybody, I'm talking about school a lot today. I'm just like talking about story and writing. Is it just thrusting me back into all of my college classes? But we had this, this was just like writing an essay. One thing they would say is like toward the end of the paragraph or the end of your paper, it's like, okay, well, so what? Like, that's kind of your conclusion. So just be like, okay, like you listed all this evidence, you wrote out all these arguments, or in this case, creative writing, you put out these visuals into the world. Well, so what? Like, what's the significance of it? What are you trying to say here? What's advancing? Where's the conflict? So, stories are so important. I think we've beaten that one to death, in a good way.
Right.
One question I want to ask you, this is definitely a promotional question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What are some of your favorite things about the Film Fund?
Oh, I mean, I think I'm actually like jealous of your concept, really.
I'll take that as a compliment.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, definitely. I'm just like, man, it's so simple. Right. But simple things are actually hard. So being able to like diffuse it down into like a quick, sentence or soundbite or whatever is, you know, like I said, deceptively simple, but it's hard. It's a craft. And I think making that thing approachable, whether that is fundraising or filmmaking or whatever, if you can get people to go, ooh, I think I can do that, then that's like net positive for that person, the film fund, the world, probably. Because I think if there's more people figuring out how to tell stories, then we'll have more stories that are more interesting. I think if anybody feels like, oh, I think I could probably come up with that idea, then it's like great, you know. So you get like just a handful of people going, oh, I made a film because of this, or I had this idea and then I finally took action because this was approachable, or I had the script that I had no way to do, but then this got funded because of that. Then like,
that's an awesome point. Yeah, we don't care about your experience for the film fund. You know, we don't look at your background. We don't look at your race or where you're from. We don't ask you anything really other than, what's your pitch and your credit card info. So you can, you know, the funding comes from the entry fees.
Right. And you guys guys do it very affordably.
That was a big thing in the beginning too, because like film festival submissions and screenplay contest submissions are so expensive, and they add up. So we wanted to keep costs as low as possible and just kind of bootstrap everything. But yeah, you know, we want to inspire people too. We have that resources page. We have the Film Fund Learn, which used to be our blog. Now we call it the Film Fund Learn because it's kind of an academy. It's not like a, there's no curriculum or anything, but it's all, if you click through that, it's all segmented into pre-production, post-production, production, all that kind of stuff, different categories. So if you have no idea where to start, you can learn something. And there are creativity techniques in there, how to come up with ideas for films, a lot of fun stuff. So definitely check that out. And yeah, it's just, you know, a big thing about, you know, getting out there and creating too is the community, you know, joining it. And that's, you know, a big part of Rough Cuts too, the community. Like I found that through Will, like I was saying, and then Will introduced me to so many more people, like through Rough Cuts and like freelancers, like, oh, he's a Rough Cuts guy.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, that community thing is important because, right, well, you find this thing online where there's a lot of information and resources and a chance to raise some money, but really doing it by yourself just doesn't always work. If you want to do it by yourself, go write a story or screenplay. But I think to make a film, it's a lift. You need people, you know? So there's that. What's that saying? It's like, if you want to go fast, do it by yourself.
Oh, we like that.
But if you want to go far, do it together. And I think making any film is going far. So you gotta work together. It's just impossible, no matter how much experience or how much stuff you read, to do it by yourself.
It's a collaborative art.
Nobody does it. You know, Spielberg doesn't do it by himself. Yeah. And I, you know, all the camera manufacturers want to tell you, if you just buy our stuff, it fits in your backpack, you can be all by yourself. You know, but doesn't help you make anything good by yourself.
That,
you know?
Multiple perspectives.
You gotta work together
on your project. They might have a better idea than you, yep. Or they might approach something differently, or they might add their own little touch to it.
Right, and collaborating is like super hard, but it's worthwhile. Right, getting somebody else to understand what you're saying or meaning or thinking in that one sentence is hard, and heads will clash and whatever, but it's worthwhile.
And you make something as better, we approach the end of our recording here, I have one last question for you. What is next for you in the next year or so?
I'm teaching high school again this following year. I signed up for another year. But one of the reasons I took that was to hopefully carve out some chances to do some more original work. So I have a couple various stages of development that are like feature documentaries. So,
oh, there you go.
You might get a one sentence.
We currently only do short films, but we are expanding
So I've got a couple.
We are expanding the feature film funding. Hopefully by the end of this year. So stay tuned.
Yeah. I'm just trying to do something that scares me a little bit. You know, features are kind of scary. They're big. Shorts. I don't know that I'd say I mastered short films, but they're
very
less intimidating. That's
good advice too. Yeah.
So probably won't hear from about it in a year.
No, I love that.
You know,
do stuff that scares you. I think that's great advice. Nick, I want to thank you again for taking the time to speak with us again, because I fucked up. Do you have social media channels where we can check you out or your company?
Yeah. So probably the most useful for everybody here is finding Rough Cuts Filmmakers, either .com or on Instagram. Because there's a community there. Even if you're not in Philadelphia, we have like online community, a Slack group. And I send out what used to be a weekly newsletter. It's a little less weekly now. Just kind of curating stuff to build stuff. Some of your articles have been in there, I'm sure.
Yep.
And, but if you're looking for me directly, you can just go to nickjustice.com. So those pretty good ones.
And if you are just listening to this or watching this and you're not reading, that is nicjustice.com.
Yes.
There's no K. Too cool for the K. And again, so cool thank everyone.
Like Nick Cage, you know?
Yeah. Thank everyone for listening today. Check out the Summer Narrative and Documentary Contests. They are open, thefilmfund.co, to submit your entry for a chance to receive up to 10 grand to make a short film. Check us out on social media at The Film Fund on Instagram, Facebook.com/filmfundco, Simply Film Fund on Twitter, and The Film Fund on LinkedIn if you want to get your corporate networking on, because we all love that as creative people right now. Check out the website regularly for the most up-to-date info. Check out our blog with great filmmaking and producing tips at blog.thefilmfund.co. Sign up for our newsletter for updates, and again, follow us on social for up-to-date info, ebook on the resources page. And I want to thank the viewer for listening or watching if you're checking us out on video. Seeing my cool bedroom background here, this might be the last time we see this before we go into that cool banner live from the Film Fund Festival podcast.
Keep the bedroom set. Be honest.
Yeah, I'll keep say. The bedroom. You think so? At least I made my bed. I was about to record. I was like, oh shit, I should probably do this. All right, Nick, thanks again. Anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up?
I guess just thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming and edifying us with your film knowledge. All right, everybody, thanks. The episodes come out just about every other Friday, so wherever you listen to podcasts. Talk to everyone soon. Bye-bye.